This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. Chuck Collins was born wealthy, but at age 26, he gave his trust fund away. The move started him on a path towards studying how to fix income inequality in America. Years later, he's senior scholar at the Institute for Policy Studies in Washington, D.C., and co-editor of inequality.org. Collins will join us later today to talk about a new report that calls for an urgent reform of the philanthropic sector. Today, Where We Live, we're exploring the future of philanthropy. Have you ever applied for a grant through a major foundation? Who's making the bulk of charitable contributions today? The wealthy, of course, but how does that system of top-heavy donors affect risk in nonprofits and communities that rely on these resources? And how should foundations encourage low and mid-range donors to contribute? Is that even possible today? Join the conversation, 860-275-7266. As always, find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. Now, the Hartford Foundation for Public Giving is the state's largest community foundation, and it's awarding grants to 29 communities in the greater Hartford region. And Jay Williams is the foundation's president. He's been on the job for more than a year after leaving the Obama administration, where he served in several roles, including at the U.S. Departments of Commerce and Labor. And prior to that, he was the mayor of Youngstown, Ohio. Jay Williams joins me now in studio. Welcome to the show.
Lucy, thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
How's Connecticut treating you?
Connecticut is treating myself and my family very well. We're excited about being here and putting down roots. So it's been a great experience over the past year.
I want to emphasize that you're a newcomer to Connecticut, because so often we hear the narrative, people leaving Connecticut. And so as someone who grew up in Ohio, you've worked in D.C., what's your take on how we here in this state view ourselves and our state's assets?
Our experience here thus far in Connecticut has been very familiar. I've been saying that while we are new to the geographic region, we are not new to the greater Hartford experience. And I say that because Youngstown, Ohio, and Hartford, Connecticut have a lot of similarities in terms of their history, their growth, their rise to prominence, and then their very public struggles. So to that end, while I very much enjoy D.C., my wife less so, being from the Midwest, we found ourselves feeling very much at home in terms of the people, the connections. And we also are familiar with sometimes we can be our own harshest critics. So I hear the narrative of people leaving the state of Connecticut, leaving the greater Hartford region, and there are indeed some who are doing that. But we're here, and we're happy to be here, and I've noticed that there are others who are finding this in a very appealing place also.
We're going to be talking more about your experience growing up in Ohio, being a leader in Youngstown. You'd mentioned the similarities between Youngstown and the capital city here in Hartford. But for our listeners who don't know a lot about the Hartford Foundation for Public Giving, tell us about what this institution is and how it helps communities in these 29
areas.
To.
As you mentioned, the Hartford Foundation for Public Giving is the largest community foundation in the state, one of the largest in the country. We are in our 93rd year of existence, and it's a community, it's a charitable organization that's geographically based, as you described, in the greater Hartford region, that receives donations and people who have been very generous philanthropically from all across the 29-town region. And we invest and grant those dollars back into those towns. We work with nonprofits primarily. We are not a service provider, a direct service provider, but instead we have hundreds and hundreds of nonprofits across the greater Hartford region that focus on education and basic human services and arts and culture and healthcare and you name it, economic and community development. So we're excited about the fact that this is an organization that has been in existence for as long as it has and has grown as a direct result of the generosity of so many people across the region. But I think even more excited about the direction that we're heading in, being more informed, taking greater risk, trying to be more impactful in the communities that we serve.
When you say that, do you mean that your shift in who you're allocating resources to is changing? Historically, the money going towards nonprofits, towards educational institutions, but you've got this new fund where you're looking at more economic development.
That's
Tell
correct.
Us why you've made that transition, that shift.
Well, let me be very clear. So the nonprofit partners that we've worked with, don't panic. We are absolutely continuing our grant making, being responsive to the needs of the communities. Working with the nonprofit partners that we've worked with before. We are going to be focusing a great amount on some of the economic disparities that exist. In fact, you did a show back last month talking about the American Dream, and that show was a perfect embodiment of where we're moving with some of our work. So that will remain the same. But as you pointed out, we are excited about the fact that we've created a new subsidiary within the Hartford Foundation to do impact investing. The name of that subsidiary is HFPG Impact Greater Hartford. And the idea there is to allow us a greater degree of flexibility to invest our capital, to leverage that capital in areas that are underserved, in areas that traditionally have not seen the benefit of economic and community development projects. So it's a reflection of the fact that we need to be more impactful. We are hearing that from our donors. We are hearing that from our communities. And as you look across the landscape of the state of Connecticut and the greater Hartford region, there is absolutely a dearth of that type of investment. So we're excited about that and what it might mean for the future of our region.
When you talk about community development, economic development, I understand in your background, you were also a banker
at
one time. So when you look at that background that you had and what kind of, businesses were growing in Youngstown, how there was a transition. How has that shaped this shift that the Hartford Foundation Public Giving is now undergoing?
That has absolutely informed my perspective today. And I was in banking when it was, community banking, when it was about relationships and really helping to build wealth and opportunity in the most challenged and underserved neighborhoods. And I actually left banking when the bank tended to shift away from that. So to that end, there are, as you travel through, whether it's the city of Hartford or any of the other 28 surrounding communities, there are so many opportunities that exist. There are so many places where, with the right amount of capital, with the right amount of collaboration, we could see significant results. But oftentimes, the risk to those types of projects and initiatives is higher than what traditional financiers might be willing to accept. So I think knowing that we have the ability to be flexible, it provides us a great opportunity to come in and ultimately try to help create conditions that attract other investment. We can't do it by ourselves. We have never taken that position. But if we can go in as that early stage investment and mitigate some of the risk, we think that there is then a great opportunity for other collaborators to come in and try to build some of these projects, whether they're residential in nature, whether they're job creating in nature, whether they are about improving access to the residents who so often don't find themselves as a part of that that uplift that happens when community development happens in communities.
Jay Williams is in studio with me. He's president of the Hartford Foundation for Public Giving. You can join our conversation as we talk about the future of philanthropy, 860-275-7266. And traditionally, when we think about, again, economic development, the government has a place at the table there. We hear of economic development authorities, such as in Hartford, the capital city, putting forth some money to help entice private developers. Why does a charitable organization need to take to be involved in that, Jay?
That's a great question. And we are not trying to, and it would be inappropriate for us to try to take the place of those agencies. They have a very important role, whether it's CRDA or other economic development entities. Our role, we think, is about broadening access. Individuals, there are countless stories of economic development projects that have come into underserved communities, but those residents of those communities find themselves still on the outside looking in, not benefiting in a substantive way from that type of investment. Our interest is ensuring that the residents who have not benefited from some of the other investment that have come to these communities are able to do so in a sustainable way, that they are able to not just see projects, but to benefit from those projects economically, socially, culturally, that they see a sustained improvement in their quality of life. So that's why it takes collaboration, because we've got the Metro Hartford Alliance, which is a wonderful economic development organization that does a tremendous job in terms of job creation and capital attraction. But at the same time, we want to make sure that those individuals who have no idea who the Metro Hartford Alliance is or don't associate economic development with the most challenged neighborhoods in some of our communities, that they also benefit. So that's the role that a charitable organization can, and we're excited about being able to play.
You mentioned this impact investing. So an example would be Hartford Foundation for Public Giving allocating, I think it's not quite $2 million to help with the Dillon Stadium project. So again, walk us through this idea of, trying to be a partner, helping the residents. I guess that would be in the south end of Hartford.
That's correct.
Is this something that they want?
This is. So this was a project that had a lot of fanfare and excitement, and this was the renaissance of Dillon Stadium, which is a historical city public facility that had been underutilized for a number of years, that had been a place of cultural events and neighborhood engagement, and it was just really a destination for the residents in the city of Hartford and actually in the region. A proposal came to bring life and activity back to that stadium, which was wonderful in and of itself. Our interest came in, we wanted to ensure that there was going to be community access. So we weren't just interested in helping to support the building of a stadium. Nothing could have been further from our mission. But what we were absolutely interested in is ensuring that there was inclusive access that the community could have, whether it would be athletic teams, youth athletic teams, whether it would be cultural access, so that when that project came online, again, the residents would not literally or figuratively find themselves on the outside saying, boy, we've got a multi-million dollar development in our backyard, but we aren't able to participate. Or perhaps, you know, we'll get some free tickets or we can go watch a game. But when that field could be used for a community event, or when the high schools want to play a championship game, we don't want the community to see that as something that they don't have access to, that they don't have use of. So that's where we were very interested in providing resources that would establish a community use in a way that might not otherwise be available. And that's just one project of a number of other projects that we're looking at that really are about inclusive community use, community benefit. And that's the driving issue in our importance. It's not the financial return. Financial return is something that can be taken into consideration, but what's the community benefit? How can we expand that community benefit is really determinant of how we make those investments.
Well, I know that you're new to the Connecticut region. In Hartford especially, some of these projects take a long time to get moving, and oftentimes they're mired in lawsuits. This particular project, there were issues with the original developer and having a criminal record and other criminal issues. And so are people skeptical, again, that this is a kind of project that's going to mean something to the people of the South End and to the greater Hartford region? And is it risky for the Hartford Foundation for Public Giving to be involved in that?
Well, those are great questions. Absolutely, there is some well-founded skepticism about projects, particularly when you look at the history of some of the previous individuals that were involved. This time, you have a group of local businessmen who have shown themselves to be philanthropic, who have shown themselves to be contributors to this community years prior to this, particularly a group led by Bruce Mandel. And the city has done the due diligence that would hopefully allow this project to move forward in the way that it hasn't before. I think having CRDA, the Capital Region Development Authority, oversee the project certainly brings a degree of credibility. And to your final question, is there risk? Absolutely. But that is a necessary part of progress and development, are taking informed risk, not reckless risk, but taking informed risk. And we are pleased that the board was able to analyze that risk and evaluate that risk and decide that an investment in a particular part of this project that would broaden community access was a risk worth taking. And we have confidence that this project is going to be successful. And we also know that as we move forward in impact investing, there will be some risk that give us pause. But at the same time, if you don't take risk, we will not see the rewards and the development that this community so much deserves.
I know that you're looking at the Dillon Stadium as the first step in this impact fund. But when we look at Greater Hartford and some of the needs, including housing instability, and what are your other priorities with this impact investment?
That's housing, making sure that there is a quality, affordable housing within the region, projects that might be supportive of entrepreneurs, small business, disadvantaged business entities that have historically not had access to the capital that they needed to start or grow their businesses. That would be a priority. Projects that would, there are challenges of blight in the city of Hartford and in communities surrounding the city of Hartford. So I think the exciting part about this is that community benefit being the driving factor, the notion of projects that are transformative or catalytic to those communities, and the flexibility that we bring. So any of those things you name, one of the other projects is talking about how do we address the issue of food deserts in parts of the community where they don't have things that we take for granted. If you want to, or I want to make a meal, we can go to whatever grocery store we choose to within a fairly short distance, perhaps from where we live. There are thousands, tens of thousands of residents in the greater Hartford region that don't have that option. So any number of those projects are projects that we might consider investing in.
Jay Williams is president of the Hartford Foundation for Public Giving. He's here with us today here on Where We Live as we talk about the future of philanthropy. And we're going to continue our conversation with him after the break. Take your calls, too. The number 860-275-7266. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. The current philanthropic system in America today heavily skews towards the wealthy as the top donors. But are there risks to nonprofits and communities if this inequity persists? We're going to explore that question more coming up with Chuck Collins, a former trust fund kid, now senior scholar at the Institute for Policy Studies. But we invited Jay Williams here, president of the Hartford Foundation for Public Giving, to get more perspective from the Connecticut region about how foundations choose to invest the money their donors are providing. What causes or projects are they most likely to fund? You can join our conversation, 860-275-7266. So let's talk about, we've mentioned this this new shift with the impact investing, but traditionally when nonprofits and community organizations have a good initiative and they want to get it funded, I mean, what are some of the questions the Hartford Foundation for Public Giving asks? How do you vet these groups?
That's a great question, and we have a wonderful staff that helps to educate and inform about the process, about the priorities, about the areas that we're funding. So there is an evaluation process that we use to determine the need in the community, to determine the experience or the level of expertise that nonprofit might have in providing that service. We're always interested in collaboration and other sources of funding. We tend not to want to be the sole source of funding for a particular initiative or for a particular organization. So all of those things are taken into account, and in doing that, as you can imagine, we never have enough resources to meet the demand that exists in this community. So that's why we are always interested in trying to leverage the dollars that we have and to be a trusted steward of those dollars so they have the greatest amount of impact. The other thing that's very important is evaluating the impact. We have to be accountable to our donors to ensure that we are judicious in the use of those resources, those precious resources they provide us with. So that's another important part, are the nonprofit partners' ability to report and to have the impact of their activities evaluated in a way that lets us know, yeah, this is absolutely working. And if it isn't working, is there something we can learn to improve it?
Mm. You mentioned donors, and that was my next question, because when someone is able to provide a substantial amount of money, oftentimes there's a return there, right? So they can get their name on a museum or a particular school. And I'm just curious how you weigh the requests of these wealthy donors and when you think about how to allocate the money and what is ethical, so to speak.
Well, there are a number of different ways that donors can choose to exercise their philanthropic interests. Some of them do it through donor advised funds, where in a donor advised fund, the donor, or they can establish an advisor to direct the types of philanthropic activities they want to provide grants to. There are IRS laws that articulate what is and is not permissible, so clearly they have to be within the bounds of those laws. But other than that, you know, nothing that is immoral or unethical or illegal, that would clearly be a problem. But donors have it's limited only really by their imagination. It's limited only by their imagination and obviously the laws that are established under a donor advised fund. A number of donors, and this is where the Hartford Foundation really stands apart from other community foundations across the country, is that we have a significant degree of unrestricted funds. And that's where the donor says, we trust the Hartford Foundation. We've looked at the mission. We've looked at the thrust, the core values of the foundation, and we're going to make a philanthropic donation to the foundation and then allow the foundation to make those grants in the way it deems best for the community. So, you know, we have most community foundations, a number of them have maybe 5 or 10 or 20% of their grants unrestricted. Ours is upward of 60%. So I think that speaks volumes for the trust that donors have in the Hartford Foundation. So those are two examples, and there are, you know, other nuances in between, but it is really about honoring donor intent. That's the core of what we're doing. So whether the donor says, you put it where you think it's best, or the donor says, here's my intention, and here's where I'd like to see those grants go.
Now, you know the state of Connecticut's been dealing with some fiscal problems of the past several years. These multi-billion dollar deficits aren't going away anytime soon. You're seeing the state legislature, you know, year after year, diminishing some of the money that was given to these nonprofit organizations that are providing safety net programs.
Absolutely.
And so what kind of, where does that put the Hartford Foundation for Public Giving in terms of seeing a lot of these nonprofits, you know, maybe relying on you for those resources? And, you know, that can be a precarious situation when government is not fulfilling obligations to fund these programs.
Absolutely. And we have seen an increased pressure on not just on the Hartford Foundation, but on community foundations across the region in light of those government cuts. And it's an obligation, a requirement that the federal government, the state government, local government still have an obligation to provide resources. That being said, we also understand the political dynamics, dynamics can often affect that. So we have increased our programs that provide assistance to those nonprofits that are being impacted by the cuts. Some of them are transitioning out into mergers, or some of them are unfortunately having to see their doors closed. But what we try to do and what we have been doing is increasing the amount of resources to those organizations to help them in an orderly fashion decide to either merge or collaborate with another organization to provide them that bridge financing that they need until they can find other resources. It is a problem. As a matter of fact, we have collaborated with other community foundations across the state in publishing op-eds speaking to the notion that we understand as community foundations we have a role, we are willing and have stepped up. But the state cannot abandon its obligation to make sure that these nonprofits that are providing sources and resources and services to state residents are also receiving adequate public support.
You've been vocal about that, but are the legislators listening to you, Jay?
I hope they're listening. We hope they're listening. We came together with three other community foundations, Community Foundation of Greater New Haven, Fairfield County Community Foundation, and Eastern Connecticut Community Foundation. Together, we cover nearly 80% of the state's population. So if they aren't listening to me, and I certainly wouldn't be so presumptuous to think that, but collectively, our voice represents a significant part of the state. We are stepping up with dollars that are given to us by philanthropic state residents. So I would hope that those legislatures would take notice to that. And we want to be a partner. We're not here to criticize or armchair quarterback. We're here to be a partner. But it does require effort on both sides.
This is Where We Live. Jay Williams is in studio with me. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchel. Jay is president of the Hartford Foundation for Public Giving. You can join our conversation. We've got just a few minutes before we have to go to break. I wanted to read a tweet from a listener, Jay. Kathy says, one concern I have is philanthropy is driven by fewer super wealthy donors, is that these donors are less likely to be directly engaged with grassroots in the communities and not understand the unintended consequences of what they think are good ways to help. So maybe if you could broaden that thought in the sense of how you're talking with donors.
Sure.
About, you know, how their money should be invested when you look at the needs out there.
That's a legitimate concern, but I can tell you, fortunately, that has not been the trend that we've experienced here in the greater Hartford region. We have a wide base of donors that we continue to look to inspire, to inform, to engage. We want those donors to be of all ages and all backgrounds and of all interests. So while, again, that's a legitimate concern, we're fortunate here because we have the ability to be very close to our donors, and our donors are very close to us. We have donor engagement briefings where the donors ask us to do some research and bring that to them. We have donors who are involved in the community shoulder to shoulder with some of the nonprofits. So it's been a wonderful experience here to see the level of intimacy between the donors and the challenges and the opportunities that exist here in the greater Hartford region.
Well, when you look at where you're getting your resources to invest, how often are they from the smaller donors in this era of crowdfunding with GoFundMe, and people are able to put forth their $50 or $100? We're a public radio station. We rely on that smaller listener support to get these programs to them. But I'm just curious how the Hartford Foundation can get those individuals to contribute.
We are very much making an intentional effort to do that. Part of the effort to do that is to demonstrate how those dollars can have an immediate impact, whether it's a young person who is just coming into the beginning stage of their career and says, well, I have $25 a month to invest or $50 a month to invest. We're saying you don't have to wait until you have a 6 or 7 or 8 figure net worth or until you're doing your legacy planning. We welcome that. That's been very much at the core of our ability to provide services. While at the same time, those young professionals who want to see philanthropy happen right away, those individuals who say, hey, I've only got a few dollars, but how can those few dollars make a difference? So that's exceptionally important to us, and we welcome and are excited about that prospect.
Jay Williams, again, president of the Hartford Foundation for Public Giving. He's going to stay with us as, again, we talk about philanthropy and what the future holds for encouraging Americans, both wealthy and not so wealthy, to contribute towards causes that are important to them. This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil, and it's also a fitting topic today because it's the last day of the fall fundraising campaign. I can hear cheers coming through the radio as I say that. We rely on community support through donations from you to support Connecticut Public Radio and Where We Live. If you appreciate this programming, here's the number to call. This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. Today we've been talking about philanthropy with Jay Williams, who's president of the Hartford Foundation for Public Giving. Now, there's a report by the Institute for Policy Studies in Washington, D.C. that calls for urgent reform of the philanthropic sector. One of its co-authors is Chuck Collins. Collins is a one percenter, born wealthy, but at age 26, he gave away his trust fund. The move started him on a path towards studying income inequality in America and suggesting on ways to fix it. Collins joins us by phone. Chuck, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Lucy.
I think we spoke more than a year ago with the release of one of your books called Born on Third Base, A One Percenter Makes the Case for Tackling Inequality, Bringing Wealth Home, and Committing to the Common Good. And today we've been looking at charitable giving specifically. When we read your report, Gilded Giving, I believe, it talks about how charitable giving is very top-heavy. Why is that a problem, Chuck?
Well, one of the problems is that more and more of the giving pie is mega gifts, gifts by very, very wealthy donors. And what we've seen is sort of the decline of small givers. So small donors are giving less, and it essentially tracks kind of the declining home ownership rate. So we suspect it's because people feel economically insecure and don't have as much money to give. So it just means more power and is falling in the hands of a smaller number of donors.
You mentioned the mega wealthy. Is there this feeling that as they give more and more of their money to particular charitable organizations, that this is their way of paying taxes to benefit the public good? What's wrong with that way of thinking?
Well, taxes are just, I mean, philanthropy is not a substitute for an adequately funded tax system. And yet we sort of forget philanthropy, our system subsidizes philanthropy. So if I'm a billionaire and I give $1,000 to my favorite charity, whatever it is, the taxpayers are essentially subsidizing 40 to 50 cents of that gift in lost tax revenue. So, you know, maybe I'm giving to a homeless shelter that meets urgent needs, but maybe I'm giving to, you know, a computer science lab at my daughter's elite private school. Those are each acceptable charitable gifts in the eyes of the law, but they have very, very different impacts. And what we're seeing is wealthy people tend to give to the things that affect them, arts and culture organizations, schools, alma maters, things that help their children, and are not giving to the things that are kind of a substitute for public-supported social services and that sort of thing.
And how often are the mega wealthy creating or using vehicles, investment vehicles, to protect their wealth versus, as you mentioned, helping programs in the communities?
Well, now, you know, I think most people are generous and are acting out of a generous impulse. But what we see at the very high end, I mean, the 10 million and up donors, is it's very, very tax-based. You know, they're sort of looking at how to reduce their taxes, and their giving is more incentivized by tax policy. And so one of the problems as wealth concentrates in fewer and fewer hands is some people are hiding their wealth offshore or in trusts, and some are moving it into charitable entities, which may eventually pay out and money may hit the street to serve community needs. But it may be a while, and it may be never, is part of our concern.
There was a lot of talk around the 2017 tax law impacting charitable giving. We were speaking with Jay Williams earlier about how a particular foundation here, the Hartford Foundation for Public Giving, is trying to reach those low and mid-range donors. But with the change in tax law, are we going to see less of those middle-class Americans that are even interested in charitable giving, Chuck?
I think it is going to have an adverse impact because, you know, but just by doubling the personal exemption, the reality is a lot of low and middle income people do not give based on any kind of tax incentive. They just they don't itemize their taxes, and they but it'll also affect wealthy donors who got a substantial tax break and may not be as incentivized to give money away. So we may see an overall shrinking of the pie.
At the same time, you know, there are the big foundations like the Gates Foundation that are funding malaria research and are maybe more open to funding and investing in projects that are innovative or experimental that the government would never think to do.
Yeah, and I think we should say, you know, there are some, you know, terrific foundations out there, and you had Jay Williams on. I mean, I think the Hartford Foundation for Public Giving is one of the best of the best. They really are looking at high impact, broadening access, and Jay admits, you know, it can't take the place of government. And at its best, philanthropy is kind of a laboratory in our democracy. It sort of funds a vibrant, independent sector outside government, outside, the corporate business world to sort of innovate and test things out. But at a certain point, you have to bring those things to scale. And when we're talking about the extraordinary income and wealth inequalities that we're living through, philanthropy isn't going to make a dent in really turning the tide and helping us reverse those inequalities. It's going to, in the end, be a function of local, state, and federal government policy. And that's where I'm concerned, because we keep focusing on philanthropy when we probably should be saying, it's not up to the task. It just can't do the job.
Jay Williams is still in studio with me. Jay, did you want to respond to Chuck's point?
Sure. I think Chuck raises some very valid points, and I agree with the veracity of much of what he said. I would also just hope that as we look to address some of the super mega wealthy donors that he talked about, that we don't use a machete when a scalpel might be the more appropriate tool to ensure that there aren't unintended consequences for organizations. And I appreciate, you know, the sentiments about the Hartford Foundation and so many others that understand that those smaller donors are essential to philanthropy and essential to bringing into the improvement of their communities. I also agree that philanthropy is not a substitute for a tax system that adequately funds these needs. I would believe, and I do believe, though, philanthropy can play a leading role into help inspiring some of those things. You're right. The philanthropic resources available in any given community pale in comparison to the needs. But to the extent that philanthropy can continue to highlight and keep these issues at the forefront, as it has done in the past in so many instances of transforming some of our societal changes, I think there's a critical role that philanthropic organizations can play.
Chuck Collins, again, is on the phone with us. Jay Williams in studio. Chuck Collins, senior scholar at the Institute for Policy Studies, co-editor of inequality.org. I mentioned the report that you helped co-author, Gilded Giving. What are some suggestions on how we can change up the philanthropic system in this country, Chuck?
Well, I agree with Jay. We don't want to do anything that would harm the system, the best aspects of the system. One of the things that that private foundations and family foundations have is a payout requirement. They have to give out 5% of their asset base every year, but they can include overhead in that. They can include, you know, their meetings and salaries. And so on the kind of unfortunate abusive end of philanthropy, we're seeing people using private foundations as a way to give their kids jobs and, soak up a lot of the resources that could be getting out on the street in a kind of with their overhead. So, you know, one simple reform is just exclude overhead or cap the amount of overhead that can be considered part of a foundation's minimal giving. Jay also talked about donor-advised funds, and there are community foundations like his that have donor-advised funds, and as he described, 40% of his donors give through those donor-directed funds. But the largest, at the national level, the largest recipient of charitable money now is the Fidelity Charitable Gift Fund, sort of a corporate gift fund. And Schwab is number two. I mean, they've sort of pushed the Red Cross and United Way out of first place for receiving donations. And there's no requirement in that case that those funds move on. Once the donor has sort of made the initial contribution and taken their tax break, those funds could sit forever. And so another policy change would be to require a payout within a couple of years to keep the money moving and flowing, which I think is really the intent of our tax laws.
Jay, what's your response?
Chuck is absolutely right in terms of the landscape now with Fidelity taking such a prominent role, and we find ourselves needing to ensure that we differentiate why an individual who has philanthropic interests would come to hopefully the Hartford Foundation or any other community foundation versus a Fidelity. And for those that go to Fidelity, it's not a bad thing. But in terms of the payout, so in our donor advised funds, we are very cognizant and conscious and aware and counsel and work with our donors to ensure that those funds are being paid out into the community. So, you know, that's a legitimate point. How do we continue to acknowledge and ensure that community foundations that are doing the right thing aren't unintentionally harmed by those instances where individuals do abuse it? But, you know, the landscape has changed, and we are making sure we use technology and the donor experience for those donors that want a more straightforward off of their, you know, mobile phone donation experience versus those donors who want to sit down with one of our professionals and be counseled and informed and engaged before they make their decision. So it is a challenge, and Chuck's pointed it out very accurately.
This is Where We Live as we talk about the future of philanthropy with our guest Jay Williams, president of the Hartford Foundation for Public Giving, and Chuck Collins, senior scholar at the Institute for Policy Studies. I wanted to take a quick call. Mary is in Hartford. Mary, we have a couple minutes. Go ahead.
Time is money, and a lot of people don't have the millions of dollars to give, but they give decades of volunteer time. And often they're just forgotten and never really accounted for in either the academic or the philanthropic circles, not invited to the galas because they can't pay the high fees. What can philanthropic organizations do to recognize that there are a lot of people who don't have money but maybe have invested the time?
Thanks, Mary, for your question. Jay Williams?
Sure. Mary's brought up a great point. Philanthropy is about time and talent and treasure, and sometimes and oftentimes that includes financial resources, but in so many instances it doesn't. One of the approaches we take is that at our annual celebration of giving, it is not a high-dollar gala event. In fact, it's a $0 event to recognize our donors and our nonprofit partners and members of the community to the very point that we are seeking to inspire philanthropy across the spectrum, whether, again, it's $5 a month or someone has time to volunteer, which is a huge issue that we've heard as we've engaged each of our communities. So there are a number of ways, and she's absolutely right. It does need to be recognized beyond just the dollars that so often are associated with it.
Chuck Collins is on the phone. We've just got 2 minutes left, Chuck. When we look at the trends in crowdfunding, what do you see in terms of how that may play a part in changing how Americans view charitable giving?
Well, what we're seeing is that millennials give. They like to crowdsource. Many of those projects are not tax-exempt projects. They're not a function of the tax system. So we may see some, you know, that is where small givers are kind of stepping up. But I would just say that the big concern is looking forward, looking into the future, we're going to see more austerity in state and local governments, more largesse in the growing sort of billionaire private foundations. So you're going to have impoverished cities and wealthy nonprofits. And if you go to New Haven and you look around, you can see, you know, a certain university and other institutions that are having building booms across the street from public infrastructure that's impoverished. And that's the concern, is over time, where are we going with this? If we have an unaccountable sector of wealthy donors who are not giving to the Hartford Foundation, but are just giving to their pet projects, whatever those may be.
We'll have to leave it there. Chuck Collins, again, it's a pleasure to speak with you. And if our listeners go to our website, wmpr.org/where we live, they'll see the several books that you have written to get more information. Chuck, thanks again.
Thank you.
And Jay Williams, president of the Harper Foundation for Public Giving. We hope you come back.
Thanks, Lucy. I'd love to.
This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. Today's show produced by Carmen Baskoff. It's also the fall fundraising campaign here at WMPR. You know that public radio relies on the community support, small and large donations to keep programming coming to you each and every day. Guess what? It's the last day. I know that's good news to your ears, but if you would like to support this program and Connecticut Public Radio, here's the number to call.